Internet. Thanks for making us part of your day. Pump and Run Podcast, National Football Post Turkey Day week. It's a holiday week. Everyone at this point, I'm sure, is probably getting ready to shut it down, mail it in, expand the belt line, drink some booze, watch some football, et cetera, et cetera. It's a great week as we launch into the holiday season. We've got football games to preview. We've got hot stories from the NFL. We've got the MVP race to talk about. And Bowen, you're already making a ton of noise in the background, so why don't you just come in and say hi?
What's going on? How can you hear all that? You're like a dog.
You have a microphone on, so things that happen around you I'm going to be able to hear. And B, it's funny because we go over the pre-stuff before we start this. I don't hear any noise. And then the second Wes says go, you start banging around on your mouse and your pad and everything you got going on.
That's what it is. It is the mouse. That's what it is, yeah.
What page are you bringing up?
Facebook? No, man. I was checking out TMZ.
All right. Well, we got a lot to get to today. A lot of big stories happening from around the NFL. We got big games to preview as well for the Turkey Day special. We're going to give you our stone cold locks here. We got some winners. We want you to make some money as you're eating and listening to your grandmother talk about God knows what. Bowen, you got an interesting Thanksgiving story. Most people, they get together. It's a time for family. It's a time for food, celebrating the pilgrims and the Indians. In the Bowen household, it's about blowing out knees and taking people out with cheap shots, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know. It wasn't a cheap shot. It was in the rules. If Goodell saw it today, it would be a clean hit.
He would. Let's flash back, give our readers the year, and set the stage for the Bowen family football game that took place on Thanksgiving.
Oh, it was 1990. I was in eighth grade. Big time flat top. We used to play a turkey bowl, like a lot of families do, across the street from my uncle's house in Peoria, which is central Illinois, Puma's house, where he grew up. Mm-hmm. You know, Puma's brother, Andy, was the best player in the field because he was in high school. I mean, he was a high school running back, so he was – kicking everyone's butt. But, you know, it was like the dads and the kids and, you know, the uncles and, you know, a couple kids in the neighborhood. And we're playing this game. It's going back and forth. Two-hand touch. You know, everyone's got gym shoes on. Some people got cleats. I had baseball cleats on. And it came down to fourth down. You know, my team was up. I mean, we needed to stop to win the game.
You need to stop. You got to lock this thing up so you can go in and eat with a victory.
Yeah, going and eating, you know, and I was only in eighth grade, so this was my highlight. I wasn't pounding Bloody Marys or anything yet. Mm. So, you know, they run a, you know, three-step slant route. You know, Uncle Jim tries to throw it to my dad, Pat, and my dad comes across the middle, puts his hands in the ball. I go low, cut him down. Just cut him down.
Well, no, wait, is this I think I missed this part. Is this set as a two-hand touch game originally?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's a two-man touch. So you going low, there's nothing right about that at any point.
No, because I wasn't going to go helmet to helmet because we weren't wearing pads. And, you know, I was thinking about maybe we should try to separate the ball, but, you know, you're not going to just line up your dad and blow him up. So I went low, you know, just try to chip him down a little bit. I caught him right on the side of the knee, and he went flying down. Ball out, game over, parade, celebration. My dad gets up and he can't walk. I mean, he can barely walk. So we go back across the street, and everyone starts, you know, eating and drinking. I come out in the family room. My dad's got two old-style heavy cans on his knee, icing it down. I tore him up pretty good. Had some cartilage damage, some MCL damage. Had to have surgery.
So Pat Bowen hit the shelf?
Yeah, that was it. He was done. That was the last turkey bowl we played.
So you and your flat top went out there and basically ruined it for everyone because you had to go low to create separation. Why couldn't you get – how come you weren't on his hip in coverage? How come you couldn't
– I was playing free safety. I was like Ed Reed. I was playing free safety.
So who blew the coverage?
No, Puma.
So Pat Bowen gets free, and you had to come down and clean up the mess with a cheap shot to win the game.
Yeah, Puma was playing press man and got smoked by my dad.
Oh, man. Another thing. All right. So that's great. So no more football games. Hopefully this would be probably a great thing for your dad is somewhere down the line, karma rears its ugly head and one of your sons chops you down in a Thanksgiving Day game a few years from now when they get older and are able to cut you down. You see that coming one day?
Oh, yeah. I can see that for sure. I can really see that.
One other thing I want to bring up before we get into some of this. I've never done this before. I needed to get your opinion. Have you ever deep fried a turkey on Thanksgiving?
Yes. Well, I haven't, but my family has, yeah.
Have you had a deep fried turkey? Is kind of what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's really good.
Is it everything it's cracked up to be?
Yes, but it could like blow your house up too. So
right,
you gotta be pretty careful. Like two things will happen. Well, three things will happen. You have a great turkey, you light your house on fire, you burn your hands off. So I mean, one of those three.
So you only have a 33% chance of getting out of there with no problems because two of the three are big time issues.
Yeah, you're probably more safe walking on the expressway here in Chicago down the middle of the street than frying a turkey.
I was in Philly 2 years ago when they played on Thanksgiving against the Cardinals, and we were tailgating all day, and they handed out flyers on the way in about the proper way to do that because they were afraid people were going to blow themselves up, kill each other, et cetera, et cetera. Surprisingly, I don't think there were any issues. I think that fan base handled themselves quite well, contrary to the belief of many. The Eagles then went in on to blow out Kurt Warner and the Cardinals, making everyone think that that game would be a joke when they met him in the NFC title game. Stop traffic, Cardinals win, Cardinals go to the Super Bowl, almost upset the Steelers. So brutal end to that season. But all right, let's get to business here. Big stories from around the league before we get into the pick'em and before we start ranking our MVP candidates. Number one in Minnesota, the axe has fallen. Brad Childress in his fifth season with the Vikings is out as the head coach. Chili compiled a 39-35 regular season record in Minnesota. He was 1-2 in the playoffs, made the NFC title game last year. And if not for a Favre end-of-the-game interception, I know, I couldn't believe it either. They could have been playing for the Super Bowl against the Indianapolis Colts. Bowen, your thoughts on the move? Is it something owner Ziggy Wilf needed to do now? Could he have waited to the end of the season? Was this the right move in your opinion?
I think it was the right move. That team is a mess. I mean, that's the best way to put it. And everyone wants to talk about Brett. And I understand Brett has not played well. His production has been pretty terrible. He's leading the league with 17 picks. But there's a lot of other issues in that team. You know, there's issues in the locker room. There's issues with coach-player relationships. And there's also issues on a defense that is not getting off the bus every Sunday. This was a defense that was so dominant last year with their front four that they could play cover two all game. They didn't really pressure that much last year. And there's also issues with that secondary in Minnesota is really poor. Asher Allen against Greg Jennings is one of the worst matchups in the NFL right now.
No, the stat line didn't really reflect it. Jennings caught like 8 passes on 9 targets for 300 yards and 12 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's just a bad situation all the way around. And unfortunately, when you're a head coach in the NFL, you make a lot of money. You get all the praise whenever you win, and you take it hard when you lose. And right now at 3-7, you know, Ziggy Wilf has to make this move because this season is slipping away. I mean, they could end up being just one of the worst. They could end up being a top 10 team in the draft come April if they don't start winning some games. And to think about the talent they have, Jared Allen, AP, Percy Harvin, Favre. I mean, with all that talent drafts in the top 10, you have to make the move to try to get things moving in the right direction heading into the offseason. You just have to do it as an owner. You have to eat Chili's salary and move on because right now that team does not want to play for him. When you have that situation, we've talked about it before, when I played for the ball coach, the writing was on the wall. He finished out the season, but no one wanted to play for ball coach anymore. It was, okay, let's get the season over with. Let's start planning off-season vacations. Let's start packing up, you know, renting townhomes and get the hell out of here. That's what's going on in Minnesota. You got
very, very professional. Very professional.
Yeah. Well, it is the most unprofessional thing in the world. That's how quickly seasons can fall apart in the NFL. They're so fragile. They're so fragile.
Two things. One, I was checking this bowl prediction thing last night. It looks like the ball coach at Penn State might be on a collision course in the for a bowl game this year. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you play the ball coach, you better be ready to play, Joe.
Yeah, because 2 years ago against Iowa, the ball coach's team really showed up to play that game. John Green ran for a mile in that game.
I know. I'd love to see the ball coach beat Auburn playing the BCS. It'd be awesome.
All right, let's ease up on that. Auburn's got Alabama this week. We'll get to that possibly later. And maybe we'll bring Bunning on to talk for a few minutes. Getting back to Minnesota and Chili, is there any accountability here on the players? Let me run this scenario by you. I understand. I completely agree with what you're saying. When things go wrong like this, when the locker room turns, he's got to go, and he does have to share the response. He does have to take the brunt of the responsibility for this. But what about a guy like Favre, a guy like Jared Allen, these high-paid guys, the leaders of this football team, what about 3-4 weeks ago when things didn't look good, calling a players-only meeting or calling some sort of meeting or doing something to try to turn this thing around? All they did was complain in the media. I'm not saying Allen, but I know there was the riff with Favre and Chile. Right. And you heard all the stories about how no one was getting along. How come no one on the other end in the locker room tries to step up and write things, tries to do something and be proactive to get the thing turned around? It seemed like they were almost content with losing and with the way things were going in Minnesota.
That's a great point. I don't know either, Joe. I don't know.
What I'm saying is some of the responsibility has to fall on
them. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. Right. And I would say the same thing about that team in Washington. The veterans on that team, the veteran leadership, that a lot of that fell on them. I mean, they didn't help turn it around. They didn't say, okay, let's go out today and practice our ass off. You know, practice was, you know, like recess. You know, it can't be like that in pro sports, especially not the NFL. So I agree with you. It almost seems like what you're saying is that they kind of played to get Chile out the door.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you're collecting a check every week. If you did that sort of thing in a normal job, you'd be out the door so fast. I understand that the culture and everything's different in the NFL, but at the same time, you are still a professional. You are still being played. You at least owe it to your fans. If you don't want to look in the mirror and be proud of yourself and you don't want to make your coaches or owners happy, fine. But those fans are still showing up for you. Give them something to cheer about, for Christ's sake. And we'll get to Dallas in a minute, and they're giving their fans something to cheer about. We'll get to them in a minute, but they're at least turning it around, which brings me to Les Frazier, the longtime defensive coordinator. He's stepping in. He's going to take over. A lot of talk the last few years about how this guy possibly should have had a head coaching job by this point in his career. His name's always rumored as one of the potential candidates to take over when vacancies open up in the offseason. What are your thoughts on Frazier moving forward? Do you think he can kind of turn these guys around down the stretch? And what would he need to do to hold this job in the next season?
Well, I think he can. And players kind of feed off of adversity, and they also feed off of new challenges. This will be a new challenge for him. There'll be some more life at practice on Wednesday. That's a guarantee, because practice will get changed. The schedule will get changed. When there's a new routine, there's a new voice in front of the team meeting room, it wakes you up a little bit. They'll play better football. But the key for Frazier, who's also, you know, a former Bear, is to win games, just like Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett is basically building his resume every Sunday. You know, that's what it comes down to. We always talk about it. All the talk, all the nonsense, all the drama, it doesn't matter. It's all about wins and losses. If Les Frazier can win games, he could be the next coach in the Minnesota Vikings. He's also auditioning for teams that are going to have vacancies, like your boys down in Houston, you know.
Well, so, Houston almost won last week. You got to give them some credit there. They almost
right.
won.
Those are your boys. They're done.
We'll get to them. Don't worry. Yeah. We'll get to them. I got a little space carved out for them.
But that's what he's doing, Joe. He's got to win now. He's got to show Ziggy Wilf and ownership around the league that he can get Brett Favre to play well, too, and that he can make this offense all about Adrian Peterson. That's what he's got to do. He's got to show everyone that he is in full control of this team. And that when, like we're saying, a team like Houston, the ownership down there says, hey, man, look what Leslie Frazier's doing. You know, Minnesota doesn't offer. We got to interview this guy. He might be the right guy for us.
With six games to go, what do you think happens with Minnesota? You think they win three? You think they win four? Do they at least turn it around and get competitive, or do you think it gets worse from here?
I think it's hard to judge how many wins they get, but I think they'll be a lot better football team. I think that's going to be a tougher game moving forward than it was, obviously, the last 2 weeks at Chicago and Green Bay, where they basically laid down.
All right, well, that's that for the Vikings. It has been a disappointing season, to say the least. Chile is out. We'll see what Les Frazier can do. This might be an interesting team to bet this weekend and possibly next weekend, because if you can accurately predict how this team's going to turn, if they're going to show up motivated, if this is something, this firing is going to get them going a little bit, it's going to make them all happy and get them on pace, you might get a good line in this game this weekend. I haven't really looked at what's going on with the Vikes or who they're going to play or any of that. I'm just focusing on Thanksgiving for now, but there could be some opportunity there, so keep that in mind. Big story number two, Bowen, your boy, he's at it again. He's at it again, demonstrating he's just not cut out to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. That should ring some bells as to who we're talking about. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's Vince Young once again in the news for anything but winning games and making plays. Young and Jeff Fisher, apparently got into it after Sunday's loss to the Redskins. Redskins who got blown out on Monday night at home against the Eagles just a few nights ago, come in on short rest, pull off the overtime winner against Tennessee, who's reeling. Just a few weeks ago, it seems like how you and I were talking about this team being a potential contender. Since then, they've done nothing but lose, so we've mushed them. But they've lost every single game. I think it's been three straight or so.
Yeah.
Young's awful, throwing shoulder pads into the stands. He claims he always throws souvenirs up there. Yeah. My first question is, who wants your souvenirs? I don't want your shoe or your wristband. You're not any good, number one. And number
two, want his pads. What are you going to do with his pads?
I put them on. I don't know. It's not like you can wear them to the office if you're going into Geico or Allstate Insurance for the day to get your job done. It's not going to work. But then after the game, Fisher's apparently trying to address the team. Young's muttering expletives. They get into a heated debate. Young storms out. You know, acting like a baby. That's what it all comes down to. This guy just doesn't seem to have the maturity. He seems to be a baby. It's always something with him. Now we're hearing from owner Bud Adams that these two need to get along because they're both going to be back next year. Your thoughts on this situation? What's going to happen here? Can Jeff Fisher stay with this job if he's going to have to continue to deal with Vince Young?
Well, I think that's, the last thing you said is, it's just one of the worst things about the NFL when the owner steps in and says something like that. That's the old school Dan Snyder. That's the Dan Snyder I played for, mm-hmm. where he made all the decisions. Coach Spurrier, when I was there, wanted to keep three quarterbacks. Dan Snyder said, no, we're keeping two. It turned out we had to play Rob Johnson. We picked up Tim Hasselbeck. It was all because of an owner's decision. The owner needs a butt out.
Rob Johnson. Wait a minute. Yeah. I wasn't even paying attention. Rob,
hell yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you.
Tell that story real quick about how so you guys had Rob Johnson. Didn't he come in the game when you were at Buffalo?
Oh, yeah. The place went nuts.
But you said it was the loudest you've ever heard a stadium.
Loudest I've ever heard a stadium when Rob Johnson came in.
For those of you who don't remember, Rob Johnson was the guy who took over for Doug Flutie in Tennessee for some unknown reason. Wade Phillips, we can credit him with this one. In the first round of the playoffs the year Tennessee went to the Super Bowl, and I know I'm spoiling the surprise, but the Miracle City, or the Music City Miracle, what it referred to as Frank Wycheck, et cetera, et cetera. Buffalo lost the game after Doug Flutie did everything to get them to the playoffs. Wade Phillips decided to go with Rob John. Where was he from? USC?
Yeah, he's a California guy.
Jesus. Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw you off track. I just had to bring that up.
Yeah, but that was a long day in Buffalo. But getting back to Vince Young, yeah, Joe, I agree with everything you say. Because here's, you want a comparison? Look at Donnie Mack. Donnie Mack gets pulled for Rex Grossman in a two-minute situation, benched. He's not even hurt. I mean, they make up some rumors that he's hurt, but he's not even hurt. He has to go through an entire off week listening to that crap. Has to go through a game on Monday night where his team gets completely embarrassed. He comes back and throws for 376 against Vince Young's team and never says a word about it, man. Never says a word. Handles it like a complete pro. Like you should. If you get benched, you get benched. You know why you're getting benched? Because you're not playing good enough football. That's how it is in the NFL. This is, like we said before, it's all about wins and losses. And if you can't produce in the field, and the head coach says, hey, look, I'm going to sit you down. Hey, man, it happened to me a lot. It happened to me.
I know.
More than I want to talk about.
All the time.
Yeah, I can remember multiple times coming to the sideline and the DB coach saying, hey, man, you don't got it today. We're sitting you down. You know what? I was pissed. I was furious. The last thing I was doing is throw my pads in the crowd and bitch about it.
So they would tell you, it's just not working out for you today. We're going to try someone else for the rest of this game.
Yes.
Your first thought wasn't, I have to take these shoulder pads off and punch them up into the seats.
No, and I didn't go run out of the locker room when Coach Gibbs was talking. I tell you that right now. Because you know what? If I did, they would have closed the door behind me and locked it and said, see ya. So, I don't know. I mean, Donnie Mack, Peyton Manning, Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, down the line. Down the line. Jay Cutler, a very emotional quarterback.
Yeah, he still acts professional, though. I mean, you're right. He gets worked up, but at the end of the day, he's not running off the field like a baby.
No. And that's the thing. When you play quarterback in the NFL, you are held to a higher standard. If you don't like it, then get a new line of work, because that's how it is. And everyone on that team is looking at you. And right now, if I'm on the Titans, I'm saying get the hell out of here, man. You are not a leader. I don't want to play for you. Because you could see, Joe, in that Washington game this past weekend. Those guys played hard for Donnie Mack, man. They leaned on him.
Yep.
They leaned on him. They stuck with him through the benching, the blowout of Philly, came back, played a hell of a football game, and a game they should not have won. I mean, going into Sunday, I'd be surprised if a lot of people put money on the Skins.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying, going forward, yeah, I agree. Jeff Fisher said the right things. He keeps saying the right things. Even if he wasn't hurt, he wouldn't be our starter. And he's owed over $4 million next year. You pay $4 million for that, get out of here. Get out.
In a lot of situations, sometimes when you have these sort of spats between players and coaches, you might not be sure who to side with. You might lean one way, but you know, you think to yourself, I don't know, really know the whole side of the story. This is one where I'm confident siding with Fisher. The main reason is, he's the longest tenured coach in the league. The guy's been around forever. He's been around since the Titans were in Houston and they were the Oilers. That's how long this guy goes back. He has a great reputation. He's won games. He's been to the Super Bowl. And he manages the locker room so well, because you never hear these stories. In a lot of years where Tennessee could have folded up late, he's been able to turn this team around. Last year's a perfect example, I believe. Didn't they go with Vince Young? They went on like a 7 or 8 game win streak and almost got themselves into playoff contention after the really slow start. You know, but that being said, if you're Fisher and you got to come back next year, and I'm sure he's probably realized at this point, Vince Young is not their guy. He's been around long enough with that high draft pick that they realize this guy isn't going to be the one that leads them to the promised land. What do you do if Bud Adams is saying, you know, this is how it's going to be, you're going to start him? What do you do? Do you stay in Tennessee? Because if he wanted to leave, I'm sure he could get a job anywhere. Someone's going to clear some space.
Oh, yeah. Bud Houston.
He should go to Houston and have them change the name from the Texans to the Oilers. Yeah. Then he should go get Warren Moon.
Yeah, and then he should beat the dog out of the Titans every time they play him. This is what I would do. If they say, you know, Vincent's going to be back, say, that's fine. That's fine. I give every other quarterback on that team multiple opportunities to beat him out. That's what I would do. Right. Just make it open competition. Because right now – I don't know. Would you want Vince Young starting as your quarterback? I'm asking for listeners out there, for any team in the league right now. And I'm going to say, oh, yeah, he's a great athlete. So what?
So that ship sailed.
There's a lot of great athletes.
Michael Vick's a great athlete, and he rocked Washington. Vince Young's supposed to be a great athlete. He didn't do anything. He got booed. They were booing him in the first half, and we all know he doesn't respond well to booing.
That needs to be brought up, too. Remember, what was it, 2008? He decided to take his ball and go home?
Yeah. Have you ever heard a story about Peyton Manning or Tom Brady getting booed and just getting all upset and leaving?
No, I think that as an athlete, competitive athlete, that should fire up even more.
I know. You almost would like that, to hear those boos. I'm sure Rob Johnson responded well in Buffalo when they were booing the hell out of him.
No, he did.
Did he have a huge day?
No, none of us did.
None of us did. Interesting. All right. All right, so we got to Chile, we got to Vince Young. Here's number three. We're going to play a little mix and match here. We're going to give you our opinions as if you want them. You probably want Bowens. You could care less for mine. But we're going to start ranking some MVP candidates. We've got 10 games in the books. We're through 11 weeks. And the most important thing is now everyone has played the same amount of games, or at least been presented with the opportunity to play the same amount of games now that bye weeks have passed. I know some injuries, et cetera, have kicked into this. But now we kind of have an accurate playing field, or a fair and level playing field. So, Bowen, what we're going to do is we're going to go back and forth, and we're going to work our way from 3 to 1, meaning who do you have in third place right now? Who do you have in second? Who do you have in first? So we'll start with you. As of now, through 11 weeks, 10 games, who is number 3 on your ballot for this year's MVP award?
Clay Matthews from the Packers.
Linebacker Clay Matthews, Green Bay Packers. Tell us why.
Well, I know it's a stretch anytime you mention a defensive player, because it's an offensive league. But when I look at MVP candidates or MVP status, I try to look past the numbers. Obviously, Clay Matthews has phenomenal numbers, but I look at their impact on their teams. And right now, that Green Bay defense is one of the top teams in points allowed. They force a lot of turnovers. You can see the way they play. They play attacking style defense. And I don't see anyone right now that can block Clay Matthews consistently through four quarters. I think he's that dominant right now as a rush backer. And he can make plays on the ball. He can drop into coverage. He's kind of the complete football player in defense this year that everyone's talking about and everyone should be talking about, because I think he's an MVP candidate, because you take him off that defense, it's going to affect Chuck Woodson, Tremont Williams, Nick Collins. It's going to completely change the identity of a defense. And you have to have him. And I think right now he's maybe the most dominant overall player in the league.
He leads the NFL in sacks. He's been doing so for quite some time. And you make a real interesting point. It's not always about numbers. It's about, like you said, impact on team. This is not the best offensive player award or the Heisman Trophy award, which a lot of times is awarded to statistically. Let's face it, they don't give it to linemen and they rarely give it to defenders. But it comes down to the guys that roll up the numbers and get the wins. And, you know, we've come to, as a society, to understand that. But the MVP, most valuable player, how valuable are you to your team? If you're pulled off it, is the impact going to be noticed? So, yeah, I think that's a very nice pick. So I would imagine, without revealing your first two picks, that Clay Matthews is currently the best defender in the league, in your opinion?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay, so we've narrowed down your first two picks to offensive players. See that? I was able to figure that out.
Yeah, you're pretty good there, Joe.
Yeah, real sleuth. I was really good at the game Clue, figuring out where Colonel Mustard was at all times. Number three for myself, I'm going with Mike Vick. And there's a few reasons for this. I know that there probably from the Philly fans there'd be some anarchy about this pick with him down at three, thinking he should be one. The sole reason he's at three for me is he hasn't played a full season. He's missed three games, and there's two games, Green Bay and Washington, where he only played portions of them. That's the reason he's down there. I like the numbers. The team's winning. He's been very important to this team. He's been very important the way he's gotten things done with his feet, his legs. He's been an outstanding player this year. There's nothing I can take away from him. It's just that, and especially in the game against the Giants. But it's just the fact that, A, he doesn't have the full slate of games, and B, let's keep in mind that in two of those games he missed, Cobb came in and got the win. Cobb went to San Francisco and won. I know that's not that impressive, but he did win that. And 8-2 Atlanta team came to Philadelphia, and Cobb beat them too without DeSean Jackson, who got knocked out by Dunta Robinson early in the game. So, Vic, as great as he's been, how valuable is he to that team? Because Cobb has come in and gotten some wins as well and some key ones. But again, he's been playing outstanding. He's my number three. So let's do you have any feedback on that, or should I kick it back to you for number two?
No, just quick feedback. If they continue to play well and win the NFC East, he's going to be a top three candidate. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And that's why he's at three now, because of how many games he's played. But if he continues to play games, if they continue to win, if he continues to produce, he will be skyrocketing up the board. You're right. I didn't need to mention that. Who is your number two candidate right now?
My number two is Matt Ryan from Falcons.
The Iceman?
Yeah. I mean, I know Atlanta's a running football team. That is going to hurt his overall numbers throughout the season, because Turner and Snelling, that's their offense. But, the last couple games, this guy's been phenomenal. And he's been consistent all season. And I think it's time that we, Atlanta is never talked about, Joe. That's just how it is.
No, they're just not popular enough right now.
No. After the Philly loss, everyone got down on them. But look what they've done. I mean, look what they're doing right now. They're 8-2. They're leading the NFC South. They're going to be in it all season. The defense is playing good football, but getting back to Matt Ryan, I mean, you could have a great running game. And we always talk about running game is a necessity to get into January football, but you still have to have the quarterback to make the big throws third down in the red zone. Now, I know I'm not a big numbers guy, but looking at his numbers right now, 18 touchdowns compared to only 5 picks. I mean, he's playing great football. I think if you take Matt Ryan off that team, that's maybe a 500 team, probably not a below 500 team.
He's 18-1 at home during his career. He's continually getting better as a quarterback, which is what you want to see out of a first-round draft pick. That's the thing. Like the Lions fans with Stafford, Jets fans with Sanchez, when you draft these guys and they're going to be the face of your franchise, you just want to see them get better as they get older. Now, I know he's 3 years in the league. It's time to produce, but it looks like that was definitely the right pick. You got to feel comfortable when your team does that, unlike in Oakland where you take Russell and it never got better. I mean, it got worse. It literally got worse. One thing for Atlanta, if they want to make more news, start committing crimes. That's the only way that they're going to be talked about a little bit more, because when you go about your business and you win each week and there's no fighting or trouble between the coaches and players and you're just handling your business, sadly, in the society we live in, you won't be talked about enough. You have to go have a meltdown on the field. You have to commit a crime.
Yeah, they're just playing good football. That's all they do.
Yeah, that's what they do. They show up, they win, and they move on with their life. It is impressive. Number two for me, boy, you really threw a wrench. You're not going with any of the chalk picks right now. It makes me look like an idiot because I have all the chalk picks.
Number one will be the same as yours.
I hope so.
Yeah, well.
Number two, I'm going with Tom Terrific. And the main reason for this, 100.6 QB rating this year. They lose Moss. He gets better.
Yeah.
He gets better without Randy Moss. That's what this guy does. It's the same thing as Peyton Manning. You take him off the team, it's over. It's absolutely over. New England is not a contender. What this guy does for them, how he gets everyone lined up. He's playing with a bunch of no-names. Deion Branch, over the hill. Brandon Tate, Gronkowski, Hernandez, rookies. Woodhead, who was cut from the Jets, and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who no one knows about except for his name and the fact that the law firm, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody is a star in New England because Tom Brady makes them a star. He's good.
Wes Walker's coming off a knee, too.
Yeah, you're right. One of his best and most reliable targets is not 100% this year. So, you know, they're winning games. Generally, if New England was 7-3, 6-4, or other teams in the AFC, like the Colts were 9-1 or something, I probably wouldn't be saying this, but they're 8-2. They're tied for the best record in the league.
Yeah.
It's tough for me to not bring him into the conversation. He's been that good. That's because I don't have Manning in the top three. One of these two has to be there if they're going to be winning games and producing, because they are that valuable. Number one, who you got, or you can give feedback.
I agree with Tom Brady, without a doubt. I mean, the thing about New England is it's very noticeable. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You have those two parts, you can mix and match all around them.
Yeah.
I mean, you really can't. I mean,
everyone's replaceable except those two.
Yeah. And Tom Brady, you can see it. He is the ultimate leader of that football team. It is so obvious. So
when you watch him, does he remind you of Vince Young?
Not at all.
So you're not like, man, Vince Young just looked like that earlier today in the 1 o'clock game. He was leading that team just like Tom Brady. The only difference is the long hair.
Yeah, that's the only, no, not at all.
All right. Who's your number one? Right now, if the MVP award was given out today, who's it going to?
I think we're both in the same person. It's going to be Phillip Rivers. You know, 23 touchdowns, 9 picks, and he's playing with, just guys. I mean, Patrick Crayton's okay. He's okay. He's a number three on most teams. You know, Vincent Jackson hasn't been there all season. Like you said last night in text, Ryan Matthews, where has he been? The rookie can hurt or not making plays.
Floyd's been hurt.
Antonio Gates was out last night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy is doing it with no one. And you can see it. I mean, he runs that offense. You brought up Brady. Let's be honest. Brady and Phillip Rivers are the best at running their offenses right now. They really are. They have total control of the game, total control of the huddle, the tempo, the flow of the game. He's making plays with his feet. And we're not talking about, like you bring up, a Michael Vick in the pocket, but he's good at sliding his feet, stepping up, escaping pressure, keeping his – I mean, he's doing everything right, Joe. And that's the reason that San Diego's back to .500, and that's the reason they're probably going to win the AFC West.
Well, they got some big showdowns coming up. They're at Indianapolis next week for a showdown with the Colts. That's huge. People might look at that and go, the Colts will win this one. They're at home. Not so fast. Because San Diego has been known to spoil that team. They caught them a couple times in the playoffs. They got them the 1 year. I think they broke up the undefeated streak or something. I'm not positive, but I know San Diego's had their number. So that's going to be a great game to watch. Watching Phillip Rivers on Monday Night Football against Denver, was there any point where you go, man, this guy looks like Vince Young?
No, not at all.
So you don't compare those two either?
No, I mean, not even close, Joe.
Rivers right now, they're 5-5, so they're back in business. He leads the NFL in pass yards, 3,177. Still got a shot at breaking Marino's all-time record. He's first in touchdowns with 23. He's first in yards per attempt average at 9.0. That's ridiculous. There's only a few quarterbacks that are over 8. He's over 9. That's a huge number. That shows the willingness to throw the ball down the field, which is extremely difficult when you're playing with practice squad guys and third and fourth stringers on other teams that couldn't cut it. He's second in QB rating at 105.0, only to Michael Vick, who, again, hasn't played a full schedule, but I don't want to knock him for that. So, yeah, Rivers is my number one as well. I know the big knock is, and everyone said this goes back a few weeks ago when we started this movement for this guy, is that, he doesn't win games, blah, blah, blah. Well, they're 5-5, and if they win the division, that constitutes winning games, in my opinion, no matter what the outcome in the AFC West. Winning the division, getting to the playoffs, that's probably enough to dispel that rumor. So,
Divisional opponents, those divisional games are really hard to win. They're really hard. It doesn't matter if you're playing in the AFC West or the NFC East, they're hard.
Keep in mind, I think after they play Indy, I don't know if it's the next week, but with very shortly, they're going to host games against Oakland and Kansas City back to back. So those 2 weeks, I think it's weeks 12 and 13 or 13 and 14 or 14 and 15. Those will determine the outcome of the AFC West this year. So plenty to keep in mind. So we wrapped up some of the top topics. Excuse me. Let's get into pick 'em for the Turkey Day pick 'em special. Last week, yours truly went 4-0. Bowen, you went 3-1. We differed on the Philly New York game, which means I've cut it to 3.
Here we go.
So once again, I bring it down to 3. I got to try to figure out a way to get it down to 2. I'm not sure if there's a game on the Turkey Day schedule that's going to help me. There might be. But let's run these down. Let's talk about them a little bit. What everyone should be looking for on Thanksgiving as they're stuffing themselves and undoing their belts to let that excess gut overflow over the top of the jeans, slacks, whatever it is you may wear. We'll start with the 1 o'clock game. It's a mirror. These two teams are mirror images of each other in record. 8-2 New England at 2-8 Detroit. New England opens as a 7-point favorite, currently 6.5-point favorite. So when that thing opened, early action came in on the Lions. Keep that in mind. New England coming off the 31-28 win over Peyton Manning and the Colts. Detroit coming off 35-19 loss at Dallas. What's new? That's like 300 straight road losses for the Lions.
Yeah.
Keep this in mind. We see Detroit every Thanksgiving. They have lost 6 straight Thanksgiving games. Last time they won one, 2003, they beat the Green Bay Packers 22-14. Bowen, when you look at this game, is there any way New England walks into a trap? It's a road game. It's short rest. They don't play a lot of Thanksgiving games. They're coming off the huge emotional win over Peyton Manning and the Colts, which is arguably one of their biggest games of the year. Any chance they're walking into a trap here?
No, because they came off the huge emotional win over Roethlisberger and the Steelers the week before that. I mean, they're too well coached. They'll have a perfect game plan. They'll have a perfect routine throughout the week. They'll be ready to play. And when it comes down to that, when you have a team that's ready to play against a Lions team that just doesn't have the talent right now, doesn't have the quarterback in Matthew Stafford, and has a below average secondary. They're not very good in the back end. Brady should eat them up. I mean, he should really eat them up. And it would probably be one of those games where he's very methodical with the ball, 12, 15 play drives. And they'll just wear down the Lions like they do everyone else. Just wear them down, do what they want from personnel-wise and from formation-wise, and get out of there with a win. I don't see Detroit having a chance to win this.
So you're saying you're not picking the Lions?
No. The only thing I'm interested in is to see if they wear throwback uniforms and what the Lions wear.
And then you turn it off and eat and get ready for 4 o'clock?
Yes.
All right.
No, I'll watch the game. I always watch the game. But, come on. We all year we've been trying to kind of push them up the steps, but they just keep falling back down.
Yeah, it's not working. They put up a nice little fight, but at the end of the day, it's just they're just not there. They're just not ready. They're just not there. And they certainly can't get it done on the road. So I know at home this game, you don't bet against Tom Brady. I learned that lesson the hard way years ago. You don't bet against him. You stick with Tom Brady. You stick with the Patriots. If you get it wrong, so be it. You chase the money at 4 o'clock. You get it back. Although this game, when it came out on the schedule, looked like a hell of a game on Thanksgiving. It certainly doesn't have the implications that we all would, but it still looks like it could be a hell of a football game as the 7-3 New Orleans Saints travel to Big D, Jerry World, to take on the 3-7 Dallas Cowboys. Dallas suddenly red hot, 2 straight wins since Jason Garrett has taken over, for the fired Wade Phillips. New Orleans opened as a 3-point favorite earlier this week, currently a 3.5-point favorite. So the early action coming on the Saints, that probably has something to do with the fact that they've won 3 straight games. They've won 4 of 5. Reggie Bush could be back for this thing. This is going to be a big one. New Orleans coming off a 34-19 smackdown of the Seattle Seahawks. Shocker. No one could have seen that coming. Dallas coming off the 35-19 win over Detroit. Dallas, unlike the Lions, has won 5 straight Turkey Day games and 6 of their last 7. Now, this is a team that's won 2 straight. Looks like they've turned it around a little bit in Big D. Should New Orleans be worried? This is short rest. This is an important game if they want to keep pace with the Falcons.
Yeah, New Orleans can easily go into Big D and lose, without a doubt. I mean, they go down there and turn the ball over and don't produce turnovers from their defense. Yeah, Dallas can win this game. They're playing good enough football, like you said, playing a different style of football with Jason Garrett. That is good enough to beat the Saints at home. Now, one thing to look at is Reggie Bush going to be back? I mean, he's supposed to be back last week. He wasn't. You know, Drew Brees lit up the Seahawks. He's supposed to light up the Seahawks. That's not really news.
Everyone lights up the Seahawks.
Yeah. But if they get Reggie Bush back against a Dallas secondary that has underperformed all season, Let's be honest. That's second. Mike Jenkins has had an awful season. Their safety play has not been good. You know, they're going to blitz Drew Brees and put Reggie Bush in the, with Reggie Bush in the field. I think Brees can have another chance to produce one of those big games. Now, I'm going to take New Orleans. I think it's going to be a better football game than people think. People might just look at the record and say, New Orleans can go in there and wipe them out. Now, it'll be a good football game, but I think that's
– You're right. This is going to be a good one. This is one worth turning into.
Yeah, but I think it's good. The matchup to watch is going to be Brees versus that Dallas secondary, because Dallas, if they've been playing – they haven't been as pressure-happy under Garrett, which is kind of an interesting move by the head coach. They played more zone coverage because, obviously, the head coach sees that, hey, I got corners that aren't playing football this year. But if they do get a little pressure-happy, I think Brees can eat them up.
So you're going with the Saints.
Yeah.
All right. I'm taking the Saints as well.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you what. Come game day, I'm taking the Saints only because I don't have to lay the points. Come game day, when it comes down to laying points, I might lean towards John Kitna and the Cowboys, especially since I would take it on Thanksgiving. This is going to continue to move in favor of the Saints. I know the Cowboys have the huge fan base, but – I think too many people around the country will be taking the Saints. That could get up to 4, 4.5. So keep an eye on that. But all right, we both got the same, and I really don't see us going different on this. So I might not be able to make any ground. The nightcap, as you're waking up from lunch / dinner, you get to tune in and watch. Oh boy, boys, this is a doozy. 2-8 Cincinnati, a team of heart, courage, commitment, desire.
Team
of bullshit. Heads to New York to take on the 8-2 Jets. I don't want to hear that they don't look impressive when they win. They win football games, 8 of them, so to speak, in 10 attempts. New York opens as a 9.5-point favorite. That's a huge spread. It sits them down to 9. So some early action on Cincinnati. Whoever that is, I'd like to meet him and shake his hand, because he's putting his money on a team that has obviously quit, a team that obviously has no heart. Bengals fans, I hate to say it, but that's just the situation. Getting rocked 35-0 in the second half against the Buffalo Bills at home. Are you kidding me? They lose the game 49-31. They're winning like 31-14 at the half. They get smoked. It was like the most historic collapse or second half blowout in Cincinnati history. Jets coming off another tight win, 30-27 over Houston. Sanchez leads them back late in the game. It seems like the cardiac kids, all they ever do is get involved in very close games that they figure out how to win late. Those are teams I like. They're battle-tested. They're familiar with that situation. When you look at this game, is there any way Cincinnati gets up for this, shows up, and gives us something worth watching?
No. I don't think. I mean, I don't know, it's so hard to judge if a team's going to show up, but you just have to look at their history, the background throughout the season. The thing that stands out to me, two things about Cincinnati. Carson Palmer's inconsistent play. That's the number one thing. And the second thing, which might even be bigger, is Mike Zimmer's defense, basically the same roster from an 09 unit that was a nasty defense, does not make big plays. I know they had a couple picks against Fitzpatrick last week, but like you said, you give up 35 second half points, you're not playing good defense. And right now, the Jets are winning games because of their offense. Let's be honest. They're winning games in crucial situations of the ball game because of Sanchez, because of the wide receivers. They're responding to adversity. That's what good teams do. I like that you brought up the point about them, if you want to call winning in the last second, winning. It doesn't matter. Like we talked about earlier, Joe, this isn't the BCS. This isn't TCU and Boise looking for style points. NFL, you just win and go on the next week. It doesn't matter if you win by 1 or 50. Just win and move on. Right now, that's what they're doing. 8-2 ball club that is playoff ready. They're your Super Bowl pick. They have a hell of a chance of being Dallas playing for the Super Bowl.
You know, 9.5 points on this line is a huge number for a team that wins close games or wins overtime games. If the game goes overtime, you can't cover 9.5. So something smells fishy. I think that's mostly due to the fact that Cincinnati has been so bad. Vegas just wanted to get something big out there and let it work its way back to balance it out. I'm taking the Jets. Did you say you're taking the Jets? Did you make it official?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm taking the Jets. I mean,
right, so this is meaningless.
I'll tune in to see if T.O. does anything stupid. But that's – I'm expecting to tune in and see a good defensive effort by the Jets and continue to see that offense play well under Sanchez.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Texas and Texas A&M might play at 8 o'clock Thanksgiving night. You could tune into that as well.
Mike Sherman's boys are hot.
Yeah, Texas A&M suddenly red hot. They make a replacement at quarterback for a guy that got a lot of hype going into the year, Jared Johnson, and suddenly they're winning games looking good. If Bunning's on the line, let's bring him in real quick. We got a huge game on Friday, so I don't know if we'll have a podcast. We won't have a bump and run prior to then. So we're going to want to go ahead and talk Alabama-Auburn. Bunning, are you on the line?
Yeah, what's going on, Joe?
2:30 Friday, the game everyone's been waiting for. This game is going to shape the national championship picture. I said that slowly and purposefully for dramatic effect. That is how big this football game is. You like that?
That was deep.
Yeah, it was. I've been working on my chops. Alabama opened as a 3.5-point favorite. Alabama, 3.5-point favorite. Just in case anyone missed that, they are the home team. Since then, get this, Alabama is now a 4.5-point favorite. So the money is coming in on the Crimson Tide to get this done. Now, Bowen, Bowen's off the line. Wes, it's you and me talking college for a minute here. Don't take yourself out of the scouting role for one second. Just to pretend you're just a fan. How excited are you for this football game?
Oh, I mean, I was telling you before we went on the air, Joe. Yeah, I think it's the game of the year in college football. This is not only two great rivalries. I mean, we see it every year when we're at the Senior Bowl. Roll Tide and everyone, you know, Auburn fans, they hate each other, love each other, but you know, we have two of the top talents in the whole nation going head-to-head, one of the best defenses versus Cam Newton, the super freak. You couldn't ask for anything more. Plus, the day after Thanksgiving, more football. I mean, just a perfect environment.
Yeah, it's the day where you wake up and you reheat all the leftovers and you settle in. And let me make this clear. This game is at 2:30, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you don't miss this. Don't think it's Saturday. Don't think it's a night game. 2:30 Friday. And am I sure I'm reading that right? Bunning, are you sure this game's Friday?
I am leaving West Virginia nice and early on Friday just so I can get home. I am positive.
Yeah, well, don't get yourself shot when you're out there hunting whatever it is you will be hunting. Oh, Jesus Christ. As I think about that, I just think that you're shooting your foot off. But that's probably not, you know, hunting accidents happen. I probably shouldn't make jokes like that. I apologize. Looking at this game, we all know about Cam Newton. Let's look at the quarterback on the other side of the ball, Craig McElroy. What are his chances at the professional level? Does he have the arm? Does he have the tools to be a starting quarterback in the NFL? Or is he more like a John Parker Wilson, a type of guy that could be a number two or a number three but might never catch on?
Well, I think he's a guy, worst case, he's a John Parker Wilson. He's got enough arm. He doesn't have a great arm, but he has enough arm to make all the throws. The thing that's really impressive about him is, one, his ability to decipher information in the pocket. He feels the blitz quickly, can find those secondary options, his hot man, gets the ball out on time. And two, his ball location is as good as any quarterback in the NFL. You know, we talk all about accuracy, but it's the ball location, that accuracy within the accuracy, that makes McElroy so special. When he throws those outs right on the sideline, Julio Jones able to pluck the football, allows those receivers to run after the catch. That's what really makes him unique.
Prediction for the game. Who do you like in this one? Because I got two. I'm looking at this schedule now. There's two other nice games on Friday I want to get to. So I'm going to wrap you up on Auburn, Alabama quick. Prediction for Alabama, Auburn. Does Auburn win and set up their inevitable date with, well, they already have the date set for the SEC title game, but are they going to be playing for the BCS title game? Wes, your pick.
I can't see Saban losing three games in 1 year, Joe. I like Auburn, but I think McElroy and that Auburn defense, as bad as they are, I think he's going to have their way with them. Saban will find a way to get enough stops. I like Bama.
This is their Super Bowl.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
This is their Super Bowl. This is the game to get up for. You know they're going to be prepared for it. I like Alabama, too. I don't know if they cover the number, but
it'll come down to the last possession, like it always does. So.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be that good of a football game. Once that wraps up, that starts at 2:30. You've got two games to get to. You got a night game, and then you got an even later game, the midnight snack in the whack. We'll get to that in a second. 7:00, the number one team in the country, Oregon, is going to be hosting Arizona. Line opened at 17.5. Shocking that an Oregon line's moved up to 19.5. Oregon's coming off rest. They didn't play last week. Hopefully they don't get caught looking ahead to the Civil War game against Oregon State next week. I find this strange they call this game the Civil War. But did Oregon even exist when we were having the Civil War? I really don't know. I'm not even making a joke.
Yeah, I have no idea either, but you're asking the wrong guy, Joe. Come on.
I knew as soon as I thought about asking that question, I was asking the wrong guy. Your thoughts in this game, Oregon, they got two more to get through. Arizona's got a nice little defense, but they've got to come up to Eugene for this game. It's, you know, typical Oregon weather. It's going to be tough. They're coming off rest. Any chance Arizona pulls the upset here? Who on defense for the Wildcats should we be looking at on for Sundays next year? I know I'm hitting you with a lot of questions. Oregon's offense is that good. This would be a game for someone to step up and shine.
No, and absolutely, they have a great chance, Joe. I mean, we remember last year where Oregon had to put a final drive together to force that game, I believe, to overtime when they won in overtime. The two defensive ends are who you want to watch on Arizona. Ricky Elmore, Brooks Reed. Brooks Reed's more the explosive upfield guy, forces quarterbacks to step up in the pocket. Ricky Elmore, a little more physical, a little more sudden, more technically sound, fights off blocks when quarterbacks try to step up. He has the ability to shed, get after the QB. I mean, those two, they do a great job keeping quarterbacks in the pocket as well. If Arizona can get some kind of push, create some turnovers in the pass game, Nick Foles, he hasn't played great coming back from the injury, but this guy is one of the best pure passers in the entire nation. They have some talent down the field. You know, they can give him a run for their money. Am I going to bet against Oregon? Absolutely not. But I think this game could be closer than a lot of people think. It's a good Arizona team.
Are you going to bet at all? Absolutely not. You're not a gambler. Why do you even make that statement?
That's a good point. I'll leave that up to you, man.
Yeah, you let me handle that. You let me pick the losers, all right? You let me lose the money. You just focus on the prospects. In this game, so you look at this, do you see Oregon winning this game and staying undefeated next week heading into the Oregon State game?
Yeah, I do. I think it'll be – Arizona will be able to keep it close like USC for 2-3 quarters. That tempo, though, you know, it's like playing fast break basketball. Excuse me. Did I say that right? Anyway.
Yeah, we all know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, it's whatever, but – you just wear down, and I don't think there's many teams in the nation that can, you know, keep pace with this Oregon Ducks team for four quarters. It's really amazing what Chip Kelly's done out there.
Oh, my God, it's awesome. Bruce Feldman from ESPN had a nice article about it in ESPN the magazine, about the stuff they do, and it all started back in New Hampshire. Chip Kelly was the offensive coordinator at New Hampshire and kind of got this thing rolling there. And by the way, here's another thing to look at I saw on the internet the other day. Oregon, Phil Knight, the man behind the legend at Nike, is donating millions more for a whole new football facility there. It's like a $42 million complex. It's a building solely dedicated to football. If you're a recruit, this would be the thing that sells you on where to go, because I don't think you're going to have another facility that's better. You got to look it up online. It's this beautiful building. They got like 10 positional meeting rooms, huge. I mean, it's just lounges, recruit lounges, areas for professional scouts to work. It's the bee's knees. How about that? That's a line you can associate with.
Well, when they went to game day, when Stanford played Oregon, the best sign I saw there was Phil Knight went to Stanford so he can buy Oregon nice things. And I think he's doing that. So,
wait, Phil Knight went to Stanford so he could buy Oregon. He didn't go to see. Is that just a joke? Am I missing something?
I think he had some kind of connection at Stanford going there for a year or two, for maybe a doctorate or something.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good line. I got to look that up. Damn it, Bunning. I had the whole thing formatted for what questions I was going to ask you. And then you have to say something like that and screw me all up. Let me ask you this. Is there anything that can be done in the two games we talked about where Cam Newton slips and LaMichael James takes over in the lead for the Heisman? Is there anything that can be done in your opinion?
Well, yeah, absolutely. If LaMichael James goes off and Cam Newton has one of those prototypical, you know, three interceptions games as we saw from Ryan Mallett against Alabama, Alabama forces turnovers. They can create pressure with four. They're unique in their zone schemes behind. And Cam Newton, you know, he's more of a one-read guy at this stage. He's done a better job, and he's shown a willingness to try to work the field, go through his progressions. But the guy's only played 10, 11 games at the 1A level. He's seeing a whole new monster this week in Alabama. It's going to be tough. He's got to take good care of the football. You know, if he can get a win and play decently, I think he'll be fine. But if he gets a loss and doesn't play well at all, LaMichael James goes off in a primetime game, you know, it could start to sway the balances, though. But like I said, don't sleep on Kellen Moore, a guy out of Boise.
Well, that's where we're getting to next. The Midnight Snack in the WAC, 12:15 Friday evening. This is the one to watch. It's crazy that this is the case. I don't think I've watched any team in college football more this year than Boise State. This team, I found them on TV. I found them on the computer. Somehow every week I am watching this team play football. And I'll be doing it once again Friday as they head to Nevada for the biggest game of the season to date. And obviously, this is the lone team left that can possibly knock them off. Boise opened as a 15-point favorite. It dropped. They're now a 14-point favorite. Over-under, though, keep in mind, 68 points. These two teams know how to score. Boise is coming off an absolute dismantling of a Fresno State team that was half decent. They had to go up to Boise to play them. They got completely shut out. as I think Boise rolled up like 52 points in that game. This is Nevada, though, and Colin Kaepernick. And, Wes, for people who don't know Colin Kaepernick, the mobile, experienced, savvy veteran quarterback at Nevada, what should they look for him? Is this a guy that has the skill set to play at the next level? And if so, would he be able to play at quarterback, or would you move this guy to maybe wide receiver or running back?
You know, I think he is a quarterback, to be honest. He's kind of like the Cam Newton out west. No one knows about him because we don't watch any Nevada games. But right. He's 6'6", he's 240, he's got that long strider speed once he gets going, he's got a strong arm, he's developed a lot
as
a passer.
Is he a two-stepper?
No, he's not a two-stepper. This is a strider. Takes a little bit to get going. But once he gets going, at 6'6", 240, the guy's a bear to bring down in the open field. Some people earlier in the year were saying maybe he's more of an H-back, a tight end, but he's developed as a passer. I think we're going to see him at the Senior Bowl most likely, Joe, and we can make our make our opinions down there. But I think he has the ability to create a lot of trouble for this Boise State defense, can keep plays alive, keeps his eyes down the field. You know, he can put up some points. There's no doubt about that.
On the other side of the ball, you've got arguably the most efficient quarterback. This guy, it's Wes, when you watch Kellen Moore, is there any – I mean, come on, man. Can this guy start at the next level? I know he's a little bit smaller and he doesn't have the big arm, but didn't they say that about Drew Brees too?
Yeah, the thing – you know, Kellen Moore, he's 5'11 and a half on a good day. And it hurts, and it is what it is. And you can tell he doesn't have that arm strength to consistently throw the ball outside the numbers. You know, that's going to hurt him. But the guy's a winner. And, you know, I dogged Colt McCoy a bit come draft day, and the guy's a winner. He's finding a way to win football games. So he's starting to open up my mind a bit, Kellen Moore. The thing we have to remember with him is he's throwing to, in my opinion, the best pair of wide receivers on any team in the nation.
Without question. I couldn't agree more. You should write about it because no one talks about those two. Those two deserve a hell of a lot more credit. Break them down for us.
Yeah, I mean, Titus Young is your vertical threat. He's your Bernard Berry and your Johnny Knox, the guy that can get down the field. One of the few receivers that opposing corners are actually afraid of down the field. They give this guy so much cushion because they don't want him to get behind him. He's still able to, but he snaps off routes, especially on the deep out. Then you have Pettis, the big 6'3", 205-pound guy, a decent route runner, but when he is able to get his body between the ball and the cornerback, long arms, powerful hands, plucks it away from his frame as well as anyone, good body control. They complement each other so well. You know, it's tough for a corner to go from a speedster over to the big physical guy. Really keeps opposing defenses off balance. They're really what makes this Boise State offense so unique and so explosive.
Any chance Nevada pulls the upset, in your opinion?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, me neither. Boise's just too good. Their defense shuts people down.
Yeah,
they're just too well balanced.
Yeah, Nevada will score some points, but it's like Oregon. When you have to score with them for four quarters, you're going to make mistakes because they're just more efficient than you are.
Well put, well put. All right, well, look, that wraps it up. This thing was a beast today. I didn't think it was going to be this long, but it was an absolute beast. Wes, thanks for coming on and helping us out. Please don't shoot yourself in the foot when you're hunting over the Thanksgiving holiday. Please don't get lost in West Virginia. We all know it's very dangerous out there in the wilderness. So there's a lot I want you to focus on. Come Friday or so, lots of games to get back and zero in on. So thank you for stopping by. Thanks for Bowen for being here and then bailing on me early. And thank you for tuning in. For everyone, that's what we're thankful for. We're thankful for the readers. We're thankful for our health. Thank you for stopping by. I hope you guys all have a wonderful holiday weekend. Be safe, don't drink and drive, and we'll see you next week for the next installment of the Bump and Run podcast. Happy holidays, everyone. What you gonna do when they come?